Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Hackers and HackZen podcast. You're about to join Erica, Jax, and John for an inclusive cybersecurity conversation designed to educate and break the stereotypes of cybersecurity professionals while providing life hacks on how to handle burnout, networking, and goal setting. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Everybody, welcome back, and I am so excited for our guest today. Our guest works at Weill Cornell Medicine College as the Director of Quality and Patient Safety. She is also the Vice Chair for Patient Safety and Quality Improvement, and we are going to chat about something really cool today. We're going to talk with Dr. Trish on how she connects with complete strangers in 15 minutes or less. Dr. Trish, how are you? We're so excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
We talked, I think it was about a month ago, you and I, and you were introduced to us from Dr. Ruth Godian, and she was sharing with us how you're able to connect with patients that you just meet within less than 15 minutes. You create basically a rapport and relationship with them. Would you mind sharing a little bit more about what that is in your career background?
Sure. Well, I am an anesthesiologist, and I've been practicing for about 30 years. And something that I didn't really realize about anesthesiology, at the time that I trained, most patients came into the hospital the day before, and they were seen the night before by an anesthesiology resident or an anesthesiologist. And you could sit down with them and spend some time and get their history and find out what was wrong with them, what their concerns were. And I'd say that each of those visits for me at the time used to take about a half an hour. And then the whole healthcare landscape shifted to ambulatory surgery and ambulatory admission. So you're admitted the same day as your surgery now. And it got to the point where, although we have some information on paper or, you know, on the electronic health record about patients, they don't actually get to meet an anesthesiologist until the day they come in for surgery. So they have a lot of questions, and if they had gotten to meet somebody, it might not be the person taking care of them anyway. So for me, that was a bit of a challenge, because if they arrive and they're ready to go at, you know, 6:45, 7 a.m., we start at 7:15 or 7:30, I really don't have that much time to get everything reviewed and sorted out. So I've discovered like a little technique that I use. I think it's been successful. And, you know, my goal is to get the information I need to take great care of the patient, and also to try to put them at ease, because understandably, they're definitely, even if it's for the most minor procedure, they're definitely nervous. And if it's really, really a minor procedure, they're often far more nervous about the anesthesia than they are about the surgery. So, you know, that's what I do. You meet me when you come for surgery and we have a bit of time together, and then you have to trust me with your life, which is pretty kind of frightening, you know, for most people, because you don't pick the anesthesiologist for the most part. You people search for their surgeons, they get second opinions, but on the day of surgery, you sort of get who you get with anesthesia. And it's takes a little bit of, I don't know, a technique to overcome that fear and that sort of, I don't think patients resent it, but they're definitely concerned that they didn't get to pick you, you know, that you're just who's assigned to them.
You've been in this field for a very long time. Yeah. Did you notice that it took you a little bit of time to figure out what that, we'll just call it the sweet spot, to be able to make that connection with somebody? Did you find it, basically, did you have bumps in the road where you're like, oof, I could have handled that patient a little bit differently?
Oh, yes. I'll tell you one of the worst stories. And this happened actually in the operating room with a child, and, you know, an older child. But I told the child, the mother was in the room, that I was going to put them to sleep now. And I used the word put to sleep. And the mother, like, didn't say anything to me then. But after the surgery, when I went to speak with her, she said, "You did a terrible thing. You used the term put to sleep. We just put our dog to sleep last week." And I thought to myself, it never occurred to me that that was not the right terminology, because we use that terminology. That is a horrible choice of words. And I was like experienced then. It wasn't like I was, you know, just out of training. And so I never use that now. Another phrase is, we're going to place a breathing tube. You know, that's something that I think you have to judge how much a person wants to know. I often use the term now, insert an airway. It's the same thing. It's just a little bit less aggressive, you know, and if there are more questions, then of course I follow up with more details. But I think the nuance is to figure out the details, and that you learn all the time. I mean, I'm still learning. I'm still perfecting my set of questions, and, you know, they change based on the patient and based on the surgery a little bit, but you know, I've certainly had missteps. Sometimes I've tried to be funny and people don't find it funny. And they say, you know, this is not the time to be joking around. And you know, I'm like, okay, that didn't work so well. So it's definitely not, it's not an exact science. And I don't say the same thing every time, but I do try to touch on some themes that I found are safer, let's say.
So Dr. Trish, do you consider yourself to be more introverted or extroverted?
Well, I'm definitely an introvert. And okay. Maybe I'm mixed. I don't know. I'll tell you, when I used to live in an area where I walked to school, and I had other relatives that lived in that area. And it was a time you could walk by yourself. And if I saw them, you know, I would slow down, or like I was so painfully shy, I would avoid even my own cousins because I was just, I'm very shy that way. And, you know, sometimes I think when you take on certain jobs, you might have a personality assessment done. Yeah. And my personality assessment is that I'm an introvert. And so it does kind of fit. At the same time, you know, in my job, I have to reach out to people. I have to communicate with people, not just patients, but surgeons in the operating room. I have to pick up the phone and call people, express concerns, ask questions. And in my role as the vice chair for quality, I have to interact with people all over the hospital, oftentimes in response to something bad that happens. So it's emotionally difficult and you have to be very precise. So it is an effort, I have to say. I didn't really recognize how much of an effort it is until I did one of those personality things for a position. And I was like, yes, this does fit me. And this is like, I have to sometimes, you know, take a deep breath and say, okay, I have to go talk to this person. I'm not that way with patients anymore, because I think it's easier when you're an introvert, when you're the expert and you're in the position of authority, than when you're not.
Yeah, no, and that resonates with me so much, what you just said, because I am very much an introvert.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I get confused for an extrovert, and it's purely because of what you just said, due to the nature of my job, due to the nature of that situation, I have had to learn certain coping mechanisms and also like strategies to kind of be able to come out of my shell. So I consider myself what's called like a selectively outgoing introvert.
I like that term. Yeah, that would definitely.
I think it defines me. So I'm really curious, when it comes to other introverts out there, do you have any advice on how, you know, speaking from experience, even, you know, you yourself had to develop things that, to help you develop these relationships and to do it in 15 minutes or less?
Well, I think
what can we be doing as introverts?
I think the one thing that I've utilized pretty specifically, say at not so much with patients, but say at professional conferences or professional meetings, is, you know, not that we've had any, you know, cocktail hour or, you know, luncheon recently, but and you have to sit next to somebody you don't know or you've never met, or you're the only person there that you know. It's extremely awkward. You know, I used to run to the bathroom and, like, you know, spend a lot of time because I didn't have to talk to anybody. But I find that just opening up about yourself first, like if you're standing, you're getting a plate of food. Wow, this looks really good. This is delicious. You know, I'm so, you know, or if you have like a dietary restriction, oh, I'm so glad they have, you know, lots of vegetables. I'm a vegetarian. I'm not, but it's sort of saying something about yourself and saying, what do you think about this? And then ask, and then you introduce yourself. I think sometimes it's hard to go up and say, hey, I'm Dr. Trish. Who are you? You know, that's a little bit awkward, I think, especially for introverts. But if you can find something, and I usually try to say something about myself, not so much about myself, but make a comment about my impressions of the meeting or of the day or of the weather. I mean, it's, you know, a little trite to talk about the weather, but it is like, if you've just gotten somewhere and it was a terrible storm, and you walk in and you're all disheveled. Oh, wow. It's quite windy, you know, and then you can introduce yourself, just a little something.
Yeah, no, those are great tips, especially for when you're meeting individuals for the first time. And then, you know, beyond that, as introverts, I think it's easier for us to cultivate relationships on like a smaller scale.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, it's more so trying to develop that relationship in a more intimate setting, so that one-on-one, you know, I feel like I'm more effective in 15 minutes or less if I'm one-on-one with you.
Right.
You know, rather than in a group, you're not going to get too much out of me because I'm a little overwhelmed by the amount of people in the room, right, quite frankly.
Well, I think my point about sort of the dinner, if you're sitting, you know, as I was talking, I was saying, okay, I'm at a table of 10. I didn't make it quite clear. I'm really talking about the person next to me, you know, on one side or the other, not necessarily across the table. I think you have to sort of make those choices. When you're in a big group, you have to find somebody, one person, to start talking to, you know, as opposed to necessarily introducing yourself to the whole table, which may be necessary, but, you know, I think that making the connection is definitely easier with one person.
Yeah. The something that I've noticed being an introvert, I was over here shaking my head as you guys were talking about that, being an introvert myself, and it completely resonated with me, Dr. Trish, when you were talking about walking on the sidewalk and being afraid to even talk to your cousins.
Yeah.
I actually did not realize I was introverted until I was in my early 30s. And I thought I was insecure. I was like, oh, I don't like going into groups and I feel this way. And then somebody was like, no, that's actually called shy. Like, you're actually shy, but you put yourself out there because you know you need to go and network. Because I was a CEO, I needed to go network, I needed to do these things. And I would walk into rooms and I would be so nervous and have anxiety. And I'm like, I should be confident. I kept putting it back to that. When I realized, though, that it was actually, I'm just shy and introverted. And actually, there was a relief, because then when I realized, I started reading books and doing research, and like what you've done, I created a technique for myself when I went into these situations. So I was like, okay, how do I put the pressure off of me? And what I identified is, like you said, I might share something about myself, but I immediately pivot the conversation and I ask them tons of questions. And there's no pressure on me at that point in time. I like just ask. And then there was a book called Never Eat Alone. And it was one of the best, or How to Win Friends and Influence People. Both of those are all about asking people questions. Yep. And the entire relationship that you build from a stranger completely changes. Even though I'm doing it because I'm super shy and introverted, it's a positive because you're asking them so many questions and you gain so much insight. But the pressure was completely off of me at that point in time. I just kept asking more and more questions and didn't have to worry about it. So that's what I do. It helps me. But yeah, realizing I was an introvert and shy was like, oh, it's like this.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, one of the things that I really try to do is, yeah, you do have to say, this is what I think. What about you? Mm-hmm. And then follow that up, because, mm-hmm. You know, people, I think if I'm in an awkward situation and someone asks me something, I'm sort of relieved because it provides a structure to the conversation, not just left there hanging, like in silence. Like, that's the worst. You know, like, just sitting there and then nobody's saying anything. Somebody's got to ask a question. So it may as well be me or you, you know.
Yeah. It's definitely breaking that awkward silence. And I think in cybersecurity, we have a lot of those awkward silences. I don't know how many times you're on a meeting on Zoom and none of us have our cameras on because we're all introverted. And there was like that awkward silence. It's like, who's going to break the silence?
Yeah.
That's same with networking events.
I honestly like had to get comfortable with silence. Mm-hmm. You know, I just learned that silence is okay. And that sometimes, you know, it actually opens up more conversation because some of the introverts in the room, you know, are challenged to either, you know, be comfortable with the silence or they bring new ideas or new perspectives. So in meetings, I feel, you know, I feel like sometimes when you do allow that silence to be, people feel like, okay, maybe they start to get tempted. You know, there's like a little itch. They're like, I've been thinking about this for a while. Maybe I should speak up now. So I think,
Do you think that works better though, when you all know each other first a little bit?
Oh yeah, absolutely. People feel much more comfortable once they know each other. But I do think that people are sometimes in a position where if they are not comfortable with the group and don't know them, they're still tempted to overshare if they're in a situation where they, you know, in a social setting where they're feeling super introverted or, you know, the silence is too awkward. You know, how do I break the ice?
Yeah.
I love those moments. We have them so often in the cyber world. It's great. Networking events are always super awkward until there's like enough alcohol in everybody. So what I'd like to pivot a little bit, Dr. Trish, and I'd like to ask you, kind of going back to your career, and why did you start this career? Like, why did you pick this trajectory in your life? And then what's your favorite part of it now that you've been in it for a while?
Well, I think, you know, medicine, I sort of always wanted to do. And I don't really know when that started. There's no other physicians in my family. My family is full of cops and FBI agents. So no other physicians, a couple of nurses, an extended family, an only child. My dad did not attend college. He was the cop. My mom did. She was the FBI agent. And so, but she wasn't working. You know, she stopped working when she got married. So I didn't grow up with that, really. I think I went to medical school just to help people. And I found the science fascinating, but I did not want to be an anesthesiologist because who knows if they want to be an anesthesiologist when they're in college. You know, you know your pediatrician, you might know some other people, but that's about it. I wanted to be a pediatric orthopedic surgeon and fix children with club feet when I was in medical school. And then I spent some time at an orthopedic surgery rotation and I realized that was not for me. I loved kids, but I didn't really appreciate dealing with their parents necessarily. And so that was not for me. And I really enjoyed things that had immediate problems and immediate solutions, as opposed to chronic problems and long-term solutions. So I loved being in the OR, both as a surgical medical student and as an anesthesiology medical student. And I loved being in the ICU where things were always changing and you made interventions and address problems almost in real time. I really liked both those things. And I think that's why I ended up in anesthesiology. I also really love the team atmosphere of the OR. It is like being on a team as opposed to, you know, my vision of what someone in private practice, say in internal medicine, would be in their office, mostly by themselves with their patients, which is lovely. But I really liked the energy of the OR and working with other physicians all the time. So that's how I ended up in that. I got to sort of do ICU while doing surgery at the same time. So
what were your parents' thoughts when you were kind of going into that direction, which is obviously opposite, very different, maybe not opposite, but very different from what they had done in career? Were they supportive or were they?
Oh, yes. I mean, they were definitely very supportive. I have to say they weren't that supportive of anesthesiology. You know, they're very proud of me and they maybe wanted to send friends to me as patients. I don't know, but I think the anesthesiology is sort of in the background. It's not really upfront as a medical field. Mm. And so, you know, I guess they maybe just weren't so familiar with it. And I didn't necessarily really understand the draw with I didn't even understand the draw. I mean, I'm saying all this reflecting back on, you know, why I made the decisions I made and obviously with more insight into who I am than I might have had when I made those decisions.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were extremely supportive. They're all always worried though about the balance between family life and career, you know, because they're very traditional. You know, my mom gave up her career when she got married. And, you know, so they were always worried, you know, would you have time to have a family? And what does this mean? You're going to be in the operating all day. The days are very long. When are you going to be home? When are you going to find somebody to marry? What's going on with that? So they did have those concerns, but that all worked out.
So. That's awesome. So I would love to have you share with us. We've learned so much about your career, your professional career, but is there anything that you can share with us and the listeners that we would not find on your resume or your bio, maybe a hobby or something that would surprise us that you do on the side?
You know, I think that I'm very boring.
not at
no,
all.
I have to say that, you know, getting back to, you know, my parents' concerns, I do work a lot of hours and I have a fantastic family. I'm married to a cardiac surgeon, so he also works ridiculous hours. And we have three fantastic boys. And I really spend almost all of my free time doing something with my family. And because I have boys, but also because I'm athletic myself, is I'm really into sports. And I'm into all kinds of professional sports. I'm a big sports fan. I probably know more about some specific players in sports than most moms, even boy moms. Sports are always on in my house and my kids are athletic and they've played sports. So, you know, I'm really sort of into sports also on an intellectual level. Like I really appreciate great athletes. I Tom Brady is somebody who I think everybody loves to hate because he's successful. And but I think that, you know, in raising my boys and watching their struggles, I really appreciate people who are excellent at their craft. And I appreciate the amount of effort that goes into it. So in terms of being a fan, I'm a very sort of thoughtful fan in terms of watching athletic stars and how they get there. And I find it fascinating.
I would say that you are very, very thoughtful. You're acknowledging all of their accomplishments and everything that took to get them there, which I totally agree with you. When I watch sports, like that is what's going through my mind. I'm like, oof, how much training went into this and the dedication. Yeah. And it's not even just the player, you have to think of like the parents, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, who attend all the sporting events, you know, who rooted you on, you had the support system and it helped you get there, which, I mean, I find all of that fascinating and I admire those people so much because, I mean, that's true grit. I mean, right. In order to be an elite athlete. So I think that's awesome.
And it also points out the fact that even for individual sports, there is a team behind them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think we don't really think about that when we're watching, you know,
totally.
A swimmer or a skier or, you know, a track athlete who's, you know, seems to be performing pretty much on their own.
Oh, yeah.
But there really is a whole team of people behind them. And that really resonates with my career, too. I mean, there's not, you know, there's always a whole team of people behind the patient, even
absolutely.
If it's not entirely obvious. So.
I would say that's the same for me, and I'm so grateful for them. You know, I'm grateful to have a good team, both at work and outside of work. I mean, I would say that even my personal accomplishments, you know, outside of like my professional ones, like my personal accomplishments, I have a whole team backing me, my support system.
Yeah.
So I agree that it's, you know, it's relevant in both ways. Dr. Trish, it has been a pleasure to have you today. Thank you so much for sharing, you know, such insightful things. This was an awesome episode, really. What if our listeners would like to know a little bit more about you? Is there any way that they can contact you or learn a little bit more about you?
The best way to reach me would really be on LinkedIn or through the Weill Cornell Medicine website. I would respond to, you know, anyone who puts in that they heard me on the show. I'll definitely accept their LinkedIn request and I'd be happy to provide, you know, any advice, help, or be a sounding board for anybody.
Oh, Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. It's been such a pleasure to speak with both of you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Hackers and HackZen podcast with Erica, Jax, and John. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.